about his brand new album, Nine Inch Nails and Hesitation Marks. It's hello, Mr. Trent Reznor.
How are you, sir?
I'm very well. How are you doing? How was the weekend?
Is it the weekend?
I think it's late Sunday night for you, perhaps.
It's everything's in a blur right now. This is our first day of rehearsals for the next tour that we're embarking upon.
Wow, and I've seen some video of the preparation put in for those shows in Japan. I can only imagine how intense these rehearsals are.
It can get intense. Yeah, everything we just did for the festival run, we're thrown out and we're starting over again. So it's fun and it's nerve-wracking at the same time.
Well, we'll talk about that in a little while, but let's talk about Hesitation Marks. Let's talk about the release of the album. Your last two records, The Slip and Ghosts, were released online predominantly for free. Year Zero had all those great that promo campaign with the USB sticks in bathrooms of venues and stuff. But for this album, not any of that stuff.
Yeah, it just didn't feel appropriate this time around. You know, I'd spent the last few album cycles, as you just pointed out, trying different ways to engage people. When some great things happened, some things that felt a bit futile happened along the way. And this time around, I just wrote a batch of songs I felt passionate about and really didn't feel like being the marketing guy. And thought, this isn't the time for stunts. I just want this piece of music to work as a piece of music. You know, some of what we started doing kind of felt like you were, you know, talking in an echo chamber. You reached your own fans, but anyone that wasn't deeply in that camp wasn't aware of what you were up to. So,
Yeah, so you're doing, like, great things for the people that already know about you, but it may, not get out to other people.
No, it kind of felt that way. For Nine Inch Nails right now, partnering with a label to actually do that work had its benefits. You know, my mission as an artist really is to try to reach as many people as I can on my terms. If you might be interested in what I'm up to, I'd love for you to know that the record's out.
Yeah. I guess the one thing that happened is that at one point you said that you were thinking for some time that it was time to make Nine Inch Nails disappear for a while. At what point did you realize that Nine Inch Nails was actually happening again?
Well, I think it was 2009, Time has become an abstract concept to me. You know, we just finished a long period of working that started when I started writing with Teeth, probably in 2003-ish or so. We went on tour, and it seemed like one big chunk of work. And by 2009, I felt like what I'd done with Nine Inch Nails, it was feeling comfortable. We'd played so many shows on the format of that kind of rock band. It wasn't scary to walk on stage because I knew I could do it. I knew I could pull it off. And I'd done it well, and I'd done it a number of times, and I had a growing list of things that I really hoped to get to. I felt this real kind of spurt of creativity in the last several years. And I thought, I'm never going to do it if I don't make it happen, if I don't force myself to have to switch gears or switch lanes. And so in 2009, I said, you know, I think I'm done playing with Nine Inch Nails in this kind of format. I'm tired of it. It's starting to feel routine in a way. And I need to try something else and just see what happens. And I stumbled into scoring films and started working with a new band, How to Stir Angels. Somewhere in that period of a few, started a family, got married. Somewhere in that period of time of collaborating with other people that was very rewarding, it started to feel exciting to work on music for myself. And then the question was, would that be Nine Inch Nails or is that something else? And the songs that started to come out from experiments felt exciting. And for whatever reason, there was a new flame of inspiration, and I felt that warranted making an album and then inevitably talking about touring. And I thought, if I'm going to do this, I want to make sure that there's a reason to do it and I have something to say and it's not nostalgia or retreading things. Honestly, I'm really happy with the way things are going right now. I feel inspired. I feel the band is the best it's ever been. Somehow, it just feels right now, or I wouldn't be doing it.
Of course. I'm talking to Trent Reznor on Triple J. I'm going to play All Time Low. Is it a funk guitar or a synth arpeggio thing that I just can't get out of my head in this song?
There's a couple things going on there. There's a great riff that Adrian Belew did. There's a fantastic bass line Pino Palladino added to it. And that's probably my favorite track on the new album.
Oh, great. And that's Adrian Belew from King Crimson, in case anyone's wondering.
That's right.
All right, I'm going to chuck that on now. He is not the only legend of guitar on Hesitation Marks by Nine Inch Nails. We'll talk about that after this song on Triple J. On Triple J, that is All Time Low from Hesitation Marks by Nine Inch Nails. Trent Reznor is on the phone. Your favourite song on the record at the moment?
Today.
Yeah. What was the first song, do you remember, that you wrote for this record?
Started, a year and a half ago-ish or so. Originally, what kind of sparked this all into motion was was supposed to deliver a greatest hits record to our old label. Said it might be nice to have a couple songs to round out the collection of songs that spanned my career. And just sat down without really any real agenda just to see what would come out. And Satellite came out and Everything came out, two kind of polar opposites. Yeah. And I thought, I don't want to waste these on greatest hits record. It's kind of like throwing them in garbage. So let me see. It felt like the start of something. And I just went back to the drawing board, and another big batch of songs came out, and called up my friends Atticus Ross and Alan Mulder and started working on the record.
And at what point did Lindsey Buckingham from Fleetwood Mac become involved? Guitar riff on Copy of It, which doesn't sound like Lindsey Buckingham, but I reading the liner notes, that's Lindsey playing.
That's him. Right. Yeah, there was an idea. We've learned this several albums ago. A lot of times, most of the demos and the core of songs come from just me playing everything. And I know my skill set, I know the limitations of that, so I try to reach outside that and bring in people from time to time that might add something that is coming from a different perspective or a different level of technique, or good at certain instruments I'm not, or something complementary. But I've learned, if you do that too late in the process, sometimes things are too gelled. So when there was about 30 demos of stuff, not finished songs, but interesting ideas and things that felt worthy of potentially finishing, we thought, who would be a good person or persons to bring in and try some things? And I'd always admired Lindsey Buckingham, and I've been a fan of Fleetwood Mac since the beginning of time, but I've always really appreciated him as a producer and also as a guitar player. I thought, here's somebody coming from a very different world than I do. And if we were to juxtapose him and drop him in his kind of bluesy intuition and instinct and set that down in an alien landscape of kind of weird beats and see what happens. Called him up. He was super nice. We ended up at the Village Recorder where they did Tusk. A good day of storytelling. And I had to pinch myself, man, I'm in here with Lindsey Buckingham, And we extracted a bunch of things. Certain bits wound up in the record. We did the same thing with Pino Palladino, who's, I think, the best bass player in the world. It has a real feel. A lot of what I was trying to get into on this record was exploring different grooves, and Pino provided a lot as well.
Did Pino assist with the funk that he is in on a few of these tracks?
Oh, completely. All Time Low was a different track before he started playing, and Various Methods and some other things. He really altered the feel into something that is beyond what I could have done.
Well, here's just a little bit of what else Lindsey Buckingham does. But we do have to talk about the saxophone orchestra. There it is, which is 100% Trent Reznor.
That's me.
I remember you playing saxophone on a track with David Bowie maybe a few years ago, but do you get to play sax very often?
No, I used to play saxophone in high school and whatnot, and it kind of got lost in the closet. And on this record, I happen to... we have a kind of storage facility filled with miscellaneous instruments, and from time to time I'll tell my studio guy, hey, just bring some stuff, grab a bunch of stuff, and I'll walk into our storeroom at the studio and kind of look through it and see if anything feels inspiring, as we're starting to finish these tracks. And something he ended up grabbing was a baritone saxophone that I'd bought probably 10 years ago with the false hope that I was going to actually sit down and practice and get my technique back. And I grabbed it, and we were kind of talking about Fela Kuti and a certain feel, and I thought, well, it would be absurd if I tried playing sax at the end of this. And that just happened to come out in about a minute and a half, and kind of felt right.
Yeah, and it's kind of like, apart from Black Noise at the end, it's kind of like the final word on the album.
Tricks you into thinking things might be okay.
Yes.
Black Noise takes over.
Exactly. It's like a little bit of a light at the end of the tunnel. Trent Reznor from Nine Inch Nails is on the line. Now, I saw you at Lollapalooza. There was those shows in Tokyo. What can you tell us about an Australian tour?
Well, I want to assure you that it is in motion, and we're working on something that I was hoping I was able to tell you right now, but I can't. But it will be forthcoming in the imminent future. I won't use the word soon because I get criticized for that word, but we're definitely coming, and what we have planned, I think, is no one's going to be disappointed. I'm more excited. I love playing Australia, and I can't wait to get down there and show you what we've been up to.
As you said, time for you is abstract anyway, so the word soon is fairly meaningless.
No, when I say it, very shortly, we're going to announce what we're working on here.
Awesome. All right, well, I'm going to finish off by playing, if you don't mind me saying, one of the most funky songs on the record. And also has that tension and restraint that people have been talking about this album, the song Satellite. There is a lot of tension and restraint on this album, isn't it?
I'm a tense guy.
But you don't resolve the tension. Like, actually, let me just quickly play just a little bit from I Would For You, when you really just, you just got us and you won't let us go.
And I only have myself to blame, and I only have myself to blame.
I mean, that's just unfair.
No, working on this record, there was a lot of stuff. I mean, the biggest breakthrough I had was not getting in the way of doing it. Like, a lot of times I would overthink things, and I would get in very editorial early on. And this time, for a variety of reasons, I mean, maybe confidence or maybe time away or maybe realizing that, I'm not sure. I just went by what felt right. And as we started looking at tracks, as they started emerging, and we could collectively look at 10 or more of them at one time, there was a sense where it revealed itself to us, yeah, there is a lot of space here, and there's a lot of choruses going down instead of up, and a lot of things that weren't the way I've traditionally done them. And that wasn't a conscious decision to try to do something purposely different. It just was based on what really felt internally like the right thing to do. And I'm proud of this record, and I feel like it's very reflective of who I am right now, and I've been, not to sound too corny, but it's been reassuring to see people's response to it, and that it feels like a step forward in reinvention and not nostalgia and not phoning it in. And that was what I really was railing against, so I feel pretty good about things right now.
Yeah, that was more the Strobe Lights album. I felt that was more phoning it in. That was an April Fool's joke, in case anyone hasn't seen Strobe Lights. Look it up. It's worth it. So many great artists on the record. Pino Palladino, Adrian Belew, Lindsay Buckingham. Who's on Satellite?
I don't remember. I mean, I think
it's just you, actually.
Is it?
Well, according to the liner notes.
Then that has to be the truth. Yeah, I think it was just me, actually.
Which would suggest that at about 3.5 minutes in, the slap bass is all Trent. That is some smooth slap bass, and it's you.
Well, that's all me. In all fairness, the team of Alan Mulder and Atticus Ross have been very critical to the sound and the entire shaping of this thing, so I can't take all the credit. But
if you can't take all the credit...
slapping, that's me.
The slapping is you. Well, thank you very much for the slapping and for the horns and for the whole album, and we'll see you hopefully imminently, shortly and soon. Trent, thank you very much, dude. Have an excellent afternoon.
Thank you.
It's the Doctor on Triple J.